For the rest of us, it is really good, really great to be together. Thank you, Aaron, for sharing with us last week. Today, we are heading back to the Torah. We are heading back to the first five books of our Bibles. We are heading back to what we have been calling the Jesus backstory. Again, keeping in mind, in the same way that each one of us has a backstory, each one of us has this history of experience, right? Significant loss, painful events, maybe it's an overwhelming joys, right? But each one of us, this history of experience, all of it giving shape and texture to who we are today. And in the same way, Jesus, he too has a backstory. It's found in the Torah. Right, this history of experience filled with all kinds of joys and sorrows, all kinds of hardships, all of it giving shape and texture, the backstory to the very life of Jesus. And so we are again heading back to the Torah, noting we started this journey, it was back in September of 2022, if you can believe that. We've paused along the way a few times. But we have already traveled Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. We are now into Numbers. In fact, today we come to Numbers 16. Numbers, or the Midbar, meaning in the wilderness, is the Jewish name for Numbers. And so if you have a pew Bible, you can turn to 107. The words will be on the screen behind me. And today we're going to pick it up at Parsha Korah. Parsha Korah, again, Parsha meaning portion or section, right? The Torah divided into 54 parshiot. And today we come to number 38 of the 54. It travels from 16 and 1 all the way to the end of 18. Noting we read 16 and 1, it opens Vayikra. More on that in just a few minutes. Next we read Korah, followed by Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehat, Ben Levi, right? The son of. And so we get the lineage, right? We get the lineage of Korah here. And then it continues on. It says, we read, and certain Reubenites, Datan, Aviram, Bnei Eliav, right? And so the son of, finishing then with On, son of. And then it says, became insolent. And then verse 2, and rose up against Moses. Became insolent and rose up against Moses. And what we have here then is straight away we have what is this tension. Right? They are at odds with one another. Right? We can imagine that there's some anger and some hostility. There's some animosity. Perhaps even some resentment. And this continues on. It goes on and on throughout the Parsha. In fact, it gets kind of dramatic. We read the next line. With them were 250 Israelite men. And so not just the few, it's here 250 Israelite men, well-known community leaders who had been appointed members of the council. They came as a group to oppose Moses and Aaron. And so here we have this rather large group, right? And they're in effect, they're drawing a line in the sand. Right, they are at odds with. And so Moses, he responds, if we drop down to verse 11, he responds, it is against the Lord that you and all your followers have banded together. Who is Aaron that you should grumble against him? Now you can read the entire Parsha later on, but it really heads into what is, we could call a showdown. Moses, verse 31, as soon as he finished saying all this, the ground under them, under Korah and his crew, split apart and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them and their households and all those associated with Korah together with their possessions. It was not a good day for them. They went down alive into the realm of the dead with everything they owned. The earth closed over them. They perished and were gone from the community. Now again, you can read the entire Parsha later on. But what I want us to get for today is that at the heart of this is, in a word, this is about power. This is about power. This is about Korah wanting to take power. This is about Korah wanting to seize power. In fact, that opening word in Hebrew, again, Vayikra, it's translated as insolent, Vayikah is actually in the Hebrew Bible, it's the first word of this parsha. In our English translation, it's the 28th word. So you have to travel a bit to make the connection there. But it carries the idea of to take from, carries the idea of to seize, to grasp, to lay hold of, to capture. Point being, this is all about Korah. Vayikah Korah, right? This is about Korah wanting to take power, wanting to take from, wanting to seize power. Noting if we drop back to verse 3, 16 and 3, notice that he begins by making an accusation against Moses and Aaron, and in effect, he is projecting his own desire for power. He's projecting his own desire for power. The very thing he himself wants, he says, why then do you, Moses, why then do you, Aaron, set yourselves above the Lord's assembly? Noting from the rabbi Jonathan Sacks, he says this was not a small mistake. It was a fundamental one. Moses represents the birth of a new kind of leadership. That is what Korah and his followers did not understand. Many of us do not understand it still. And I think part of that not understanding is, at least in part, it's because really the whole world teaches what Korah believed. All right, the whole world teaches what Korah believed. In that day in the ancient world, as the rabbi Sacks, as he puts it, the most famous buildings in the ancient world were the Mesopotamian ziggurats and the Egyptian pyramids. These were more than just buildings. They were statements in stone of a hierarchical social order. They were wide at the base and narrow at the top. At the top was the king or pharaoh, at the point, so it was believed, where heaven and earth meet. Beneath was a series of elites, and beneath them we have the laboring masses. We can then travel nearly 1,000 years later to the time of the great philosopher Aristotle. He penned these words. He writes, for example, to control a human being is a higher thing than to tame a wild beast. And when one party rules and another is ruled, there is a function performed between them, combined to make a single common whole, a ruling factor and a subject factor. And this characteristic of living things is present in them as an outcome of the whole of nature. For that, some should rule and others be ruled is a thing not only necessary but expedient. From the hour of their birth, some men are marked out for subjection, others for rule. It is clear then that some men are by nature free and others slaves. And that for these latter, slavery is both expedient and just. 350 BC. And it is exactly that kind of controlling behavior. It is that kind of ruling over another for one's own gain. It is that kind of seizing of power that is swallowed up, that we read is swallowed up. The ground under them split apart, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them and their households and all those associated with Korah together with their possessions. It was swallowed up. And in its place then we find revealed a whole other way. Noting the great emblem of ancient Israel is the menorah. What is an inverted ziggurat? What is an inverted pyramid? It resembles a different way, as Rabbi Sacks, as he puts it here. He says the name given to this is servant leadership, and its origin is in the Torah. The highest accolade given to Moses is that he was the servant of the Lord. Moses is given this title 18 times in Tanakh, meaning the Old Testament. Only one other leader merits the same description, Joshua, who is described this way twice. And so as we have seen in the weeks gone by, all through the Torah, it is again that reality flowing, right? In and through the essence of a servant, flowing in and through the life and the teachings of Jesus. We find it maybe most notably in the Gospel of Mark 9 and 35, and so I want to invite us to go there, 7:15, if you're still in a pew Bible. Hopefully familiar to most of us, always worth unpacking and reflecting on. Jesus here is with his disciples. They have come to Capernaum. This is a fishing village on the northern shore of Galilee. Jesus is talking here about his death. The disciples are talking about who is the greatest, right? I'm the greatest. No, I'm the greatest, right? Arguing about who is the greatest. Who is, in effect, who is the most powerful, right? The context here is we could say, one of importance. It absolutely carries that idea of power. The word here is megas in the Greek. And so we can think here of Parsha Korah, right? We can think of to take from, to seize, to grasp. And at 9:35 into that, we read Jesus called the 12 and said, anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servant of all. Into the midst of those who are wanting to be great, into the midst of those who are wanting to hold power, Jesus speaks into that reality and he says, anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servant of all. That word first, it comes from the Greek protos, can be translated most prominent, most important, most powerful. The word last is from eschatos. It is translated or means the least important or the lowest in status. And then we have servant from the Greek diakonos. All of it is just really an antidote to this way of the megas, to this way of power. What again was prevalent all through the centuries, all through the ancient world, not only in the days of Moses, not only in the days of Aristotle, but even in Jesus' day, most notably in the ordering of family structure. Dio Chrysostom, Greek historian, first century Roman Empire, he writes, perhaps you do not know that in many states which have exceedingly good laws, fathers may even imprison or sell them, their sons, and they have a power even more terrible, for they actually are allowed to put their sons to death without any trial, or even without bringing any accusations at all against them, which is really interesting in that Jesus, verse 36, he takes a little child. The very next thing he does, he takes a child whom he placed among them. Taking the child in his arms, he said to them, and consequently to us here even today, whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me. To which then the scholarship of James Edward, he notes children in particular were thought of as not having arrived. Right? Children were not thought of in many respects in the ways that they are today. Children in particular were thought of as not having arrived. They were good illustrations of the very least. And into that culture, into that climate, right? Jesus, he reaches back, right? He reaches to the backstory that is Parsha Korah. And he says, this way of doing life and relationships, it goes the way of a servant, right? It goes the way of serving another. It goes the way of, we can think of menorah, right? Inverted ziggurat, inverted pyramid. From the scholar Ben Witherington, he writes, Jesus is not only identifying with the helpless or most vulnerable family members so that they may be helped, but he's also trying to get his disciples to humble themselves, rid themselves of the usual hubris and power struggles for dominant position, and serve a child, a humiliating task in the minds of some ancients. James Edwards, greatness in God's economy is not reserved and preserved for the gifted and privileged. Rather, it presents itself in the common and simple tasks of serving others. And so we ask ourselves, is this true for us? Right? Am I living the way of a servant? You know, when you think of the followers of Jesus in the first century, the number one way that they self-identified was as servants. Their identity was a servant. Are we living the life of a servant? Am I practicing the way of a servant? You could ask, am I exercising the attitude and posture of a servant? And we can think, when I get up in the morning, when I go to bed at night, all the hours in between, right? When I'm at home with family, at work with colleagues, when I'm interacting with my neighbors, right? When I'm in the presence of that person, when I'm in the midst of that difficulty, that struggle, right? To those of lowest status, to those of least importance, right? As Edwards writes, in the common and simple tasks, am I living the life of a servant? Am I practicing the way of a servant? Am I exercising the attitude, the posture of a servant? We could ask, what would it look like to be a servant in that situation? That circumstance, that instance, that condition, whatever that is for you, what would it look like to be a servant in that situation? What would it look like to be a servant in that relationship, that connection, that conflict, that moment, that encounter? What would it look like? And then with that also to reflect on, how might I live and practice and exercise the way of a servant more fully each day? How might I live and practice and exercise the way of a servant more fully each day? I received a text just this morning, and so as I thought about how might I live and practice and exercise the way of a servant, I thought I would include you in my response. I reached out to, as many of you know, Moses, Teresa's son, is over in Arizona going to school. And so his response to me, he just sent this to me this morning. He says, "Hey, Pastor Don, how are you doing? Appreciate you thinking of me. Say hi to my wonderful church family." You're a wonderful church family. Did you know that? "Say hi to my wonderful church family. Missing them so much." And he's got too many O's on "so." So that means it's a lot. So I just thought, what would it look like to be a servant to Moses today? What would it be like? What might he need? Maybe a word of encouragement from his church family would be awesome. And so I'm going to stand up here with my phone on video. And those of you that are able to stand, I would invite you to stand. I have no other plan beyond this. And so I want to invite you to stand. You can wave. You can say words of encouragement to Moses. I mean, I'm just going to let you, I guess we're going to get a little charismatic maybe. Is that what's going on here? And feel free to wave, shout out, say hi to him. I just want him to see his church family. "We love you, Moses. Sending our love and greetings to you.
Study hard.
There you go. Words of encouragement. Hang in there. Keep at it. Stay strong. All right. Very good. We love you, Moses. Make it a great day." All right. Thank you. So if you were wondering how you might live and practice and exercise the way of a servant, well, you just did. Let's sit for a little time in silence and continue to reflect. All right, it's that attitude, that posture of a servant that's right here in the backstory. Right, Parsha Korah travels all the way to you and me. Vayikra Korah. Anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servant of all.